Dr. Paul here. Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. Today's episode, we bring back Dr. Josh Getzko. He's a professor in Israel, and he's talking initially about how his students are feeling pressured to get the COVID vaccines and boosters. We discuss the ethics of mandates and the ethics around research. This is something he's intimately involved with in his work in Israel. He then covers in detail a recent article on the adverse events in Israel after the latest round of boosters. And we touch a little bit on the World Health Organization and the Public Health Department's legal efforts to gain even more emergency powers so that they can do whatever they want in the future when they determine there's an emergency. This can happen on a worldwide level now. It's no longer just state by state here in the United States. I then feature an interview with a dad, Chris Strader. He points out the challenges that parents face when they're not on the same page. In his instance, he happens to be divorced and he's worried about his teenage daughter. But many of you who are parents, maybe you even had a happy marriage until COVID hit and you find yourselves on maybe different sides of this issue. How do we talk with one another? He has some great insights into this. He shares findings on how to support natural immunity, and he points out something that you need to have faith and science trump fear. Too often we're reacting from fear and maybe just looking at some of the science rather than all the science. We close it out this week with Bernadette and I talking about something that people have been asking for over and over again, and that is, what do we do if we're vaccine injured or we feel like we're vaccine affected? We're gonna cover that in detail. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. Today I want to talk about breathing, but also masks. So here in Oregon, we've just finally been released from the mask mandates. And I tell you, I have been so ready for that. Many states have lifted these a long time ago. I've been traveling the country, and it's such a freeing space to be when you can breathe in the air as we were always supposed to. I'm a little worried that in Oregon they had passed a permanent mask mandate and then immediately talked about lifting it. But that permanent mask mandate, I believe, remains on the books, ready to be implemented at the drop of a hat next time there's a concern by public health officials. Here's the thing. How will our children really learn and understand freedom when they're masked? Masks promote anxiety, stress, isolation. We're seeing so much of that in the pediatric clinic and in our world today. I was talking to a good friend and just saying, isn't this great? We're getting rid of our masks here in Oregon, finally. And she informed me that that didn't matter to her. She was going to keep wearing her mask. It was her choice to wear these masks. This was a dear friend. We've had conversations before about the effectiveness or lack of these masks, but nevertheless, that's where she stands, and unfortunately, I have so many children in my practice who are already so accustomed to these masks, they feel safer. They don't realize that the enemy is fear and that the mask is doing very little. To drive that point home, I had to just chuckle. I had an infant come in their infant carrier, and their little sibling was holding this banner just this week. And it says, this is the infant, right, speaking, "Thinking the face diaper is going to prevent me from breathing in a nanoparticle is like believing my pants will stop you from smelling my fart." So true. How many times have you tried to hide the smell? So, look, folks, let's embrace breathing. Let's embrace the freedom, the breath that gives us life. We've done this before, but if you're feeling stressed, it helps to be reminded. Take in a really deep breath through your nose and breathe in love, breathe in light, breathe in whatever makes you feel peaceful and loved. And exhale fear, anxiety, or whatever it is you need to get out of your life. Do that several times a day. Do that anytime you're feeling anxious or stressed. And enjoy the freedom that we have in breathing the clear, clean air. Hopefully where you live, it's clean and clear. God bless. Enjoy the show. Welcome, Josh Getzko. What a privilege it is to have you back on Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. How are you doing?
Great. It's great to be back. It's been a long time.
Oh my gosh. It's so good to have you back. You are a professor there in Israel. You teach sociology and criminology, and I know you have a huge background in epidemiology. I am interested in your Freedom of Information Act data that you've acquired that deals with the issue of stillbirths, miscarriages, abortions. Share with us the background of how you got this information or where it came from and then what you found.
There were some Israeli activists, one guy actually, who has been putting in Freedom of Information Act requests from many hospitals about many different things, including stillbirths and miscarriages. We wanted to get the number of vaccinated women that were experiencing that versus unvaccinated women. And the hospitals, most of the hospitals said, no, we don't have that data. And it would be too hard to put it together. Okay, now think about this for a second. Since January or early February, the Israeli Ministry of Health has been saying there's no safety issues. We recommend that women, pregnant women, get vaccinated, even though, of course, the Pfizer study, their trial did not include any pregnant women. And in fact, they do have a trial that's currently ongoing that's due to end, I believe, in summer of 2023 on pregnant women. But at that time, there was basically no evidence one way or the other. But they said, yeah, it's safe. Pregnant women should get it, especially after the first trimester. Okay. And they insist that they've been following up and they know that it's safe. They've been doing the research. Except if the hospitals don't have the data on which of the women who are giving birth or having stillbirths or miscarriages, they don't know the vaccination status of these women. They're not willing to even put the data together because it's too onerous. How is the Ministry of Health following this, right? How exactly are they following this? I started looking at the results. I'm kind of, connected with all these people. So I saw that somebody had gotten these data and I was like, okay, let's take a look and see what's there. And I was just shocked. Honestly, I was shocked. I was like, whoa, this can't be right. Right. And I'm going to show you why we need to look at it in a slightly nuanced way, but it's concerning. So here you have from February to October. Okay. And what you see is this big spike in the late spring. So May and June, so the red bars are the percentage of vaccinated women who the data is like every month, the birth outcomes, they're either live births or this SBMA category. Okay. And how many of them are among vaccinated and unvaccinated women? So of all the birth outcomes in May among vaccinated women, something like 45% of them are in this SBMA category. They're stillbirths, miscarriages, or abortions.
Josh, this is absolutely stunning. You're talking that close to half of the vaccinated women who got a vaccine while pregnant lost that pregnancy. It was either a stillbirth, meaning that baby was born dead, or it was a miscarriage. That's a pregnancy loss, or it was an abortion.
It's not 45% of women who got vaccinated. It's 45% of women who had a birth outcome in that month who were vaccinated. Okay.
Help me understand. What's the difference in that month?
If I'm vaccinated, if I'm a woman, I'm pregnant, I'm like, If you vaccinate every pregnant woman in the same month, well, some women are due to give birth in the next month and some are due to give birth 9 months later.
Right.
So if 45% of all of those women had a stillbirth, then you would see 45% kind of like in every month.
Gotcha.
So we're just looking at the outcomes in this one month. And there's another thing here. Okay. It turns out that the actual numbers of vaccinated women in these early months wasn't very high, okay, in this hospital, okay?
That can distort the data.
So that's a very good point. If you have these small numbers, so small fluctuations might you know, move things around, right? Might make things look more exaggerated than they are. Okay, that's one thing. And the other thing is, well, you know, people have said, well, these women who are getting vaccinated early, they have comorbidities and they're more at risk. And so, of course, they're going to be, you know, more likely to miscarry or whatever, have a problem. But if that were true, you might expect a bigger rate earlier on, right? In like February, March, April, because that's when the people are really first getting vaccinated. You know, you kind of would expect it. You wouldn't expect this kind of strong variation over the whole period.
What is your explanation for this May, June peak?
Okay, so women started to be, were encouraged to start getting vaccinated in February. And although it was, you were only encouraged if you were past the first trimester. In fact, many women in their first trimester got vaccinated. My guess is that women who got vaccinated early on and relatively early on in their pregnancies, there was a kind of a delayed effect. And whether this was through, again, some kind of detection of a problem with the development of the fetus or was a spontaneous abortion, again, we can't, you know, parse that out. But I have this sense that there was something happened in May that you know, that affected a lot of these pregnancies. Definitely is concerning, right? It's a worrying signal, and it really needs to be looked into more.
Yeah. I did such an analysis a few years ago on the DTaP for pregnant women, and all the studies listed on the CDC website to support injecting that vaccine into pregnant women, none of them actually had any validity to support that topic. So after I got those all debunked and actually showed that one of them showed it was increasing deaths in children from pertussis, not decreasing it, they've taken them all down. So now they just tell you what to do, but there's no studies posted to back it up. So
we
need to look at the methodology of research. You wrote an article, the Israeli Ministry of Health actually did a survey of adverse events after the booster dose.
Right.
And it's absolutely devastating. So I've read your article. I agree with you, but I think people can get lost in translation when you get little percentages here or there. Walk us through what you've found from this study.
Let me give you a little bit of background first, okay? On September 30th, the Israeli Ministry of Health put up a Facebook post, okay, about adverse events after the booster dose, right? And they say, like, let's talk about the adverse events. You know, you need real data and not rumors that you hear on the internet, right? And they write very clearly, vaccines are effective and safe, and the Ministry of Health collects information on side effects systematically and cross-checks it with information from all over the world, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So they're reassuring the people that these booster doses are safe. And they're talking about they found very, very few adverse events that were reported after the booster dose, right? This was on like, I don't know, they posted at like 6 o'clock in the evening. Within like 2 hours, there were hundreds, thousands, even posts or messages of people who had written about their serious adverse events that they or people close to them had experienced either following the booster dose or the other two doses. Somebody at the Ministry of Health panicked, it would appear, and they started deleting the messages that people were leaving, right? And these were not anonymous messages. People were posting under their own names, you know, very personal details. It was still at that time kind of taboo to come out and talk about an injury. Like, what are you, an anti-vaxxer? No, I got the booster dose. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, right? So it was very traumatic, and this was all documented. People were videotaping it as the messages were being deleted. Now there's currently like 25,000 messages still up there. And it actually was a minor controversy. It got into the news and stuff like that. So they have all along assured the Israeli public that the vaccines are extremely safe and they're doing just the best job of, you know, following up on the adverse events and stuff like that. All right. So this survey. Okay. So starting in late September, the Ministry of Health decided, I don't know what the thinking was behind it, but they started a survey. Okay. And they conducted it for about a little over a month, and then they stopped and they had it in the can in like late October. All right. And yet you're going to see how crazy this is, right? They still went ahead and encouraged everybody to go out and get a fourth booster dose later down the road, right?
After collecting this data.
Okay, now they released this survey on their Telegram channel on February 9th. This is just like a presentation, like PowerPoint slides.
Two, three weeks ago.
So I don't want to go through all the boring details about the survey, but I want to highlight a couple of things. So they, you know, I'll get back to this other thing. They started out with a sample of over 4,000 people, but for some reason, they didn't bother to contact 1,400 people of the people they had chosen originally, I guess, to contact. I don't know exactly what the thinking was behind this. But, you know, if they're going around and saying that the side effects are so rare, you would think that if you wanted to capture them and get a better idea, you would need a big sample, right? Because if, you know, it happens one every 20,000 times, you know, you need a big sample to pick that up. In June, they did a survey of 13,000 people who had recovered from COVID or had previously had a positive PCR test. So, you know, they're capable of doing big surveys if they want. So 66% of these people reported that they had an adverse event. Okay, they're interviewing people 3 to 4 weeks after they've gotten the booster dose. Okay, and they're asking them about, you know, health events that happened after the booster dose. They haven't released the questionnaire, so we don't know exactly what they asked and how they asked it, which is a problem. But we need to go ahead anyway. Now, almost 30% of the people who answered the survey said that as a result of the adverse event that they experienced, they had difficulty performing daily activities. Okay, that seems pretty serious. All right. So what we can do is we can look at the percentage or the number of people that answered yes for certain types of events. And then we can extrapolate and say, okay, if they had interviewed 1 million people, how many people would have said that they had this, right? What's the sort of rate per million doses? So this is a big table. I want you to focus really on two squares here, okay? Or two parts, two columns here. One is the rate per million doses from the survey, okay? Now look at that number for Bell's palsy. That's 5,368 people per million, okay? Assuming we can extrapolate up from this, you know, it's a small percentage. This is not an exact number, right? But it's gotta be somewhere in that ballpark. And you get, you know, these high numbers for Bell's palsy. You get seizures and convulsions, huge numbers of people reporting seizures and convulsions, loss of consciousness, which is like fainting, right?
You've got actual data reported by the Israeli Ministry of Health in this document that you reviewed that showed some actual reporting numbers that were quite high compared to what the surveillance system passively picked up.
Yes.
So that's similar to, I think, the study that was done at Harvard way back that showed only 1% of reporting was being picked up by VAERS.
If we take these numbers at their face value, we assume that we would see something similar in the U.S. We looked at the entire population in the U.S. who got their boosters, how many events would we expect? Now, the hospitalization rate in this survey is 0.29%.
3 people out of 1,000 are in the hospital in the last month. That seems really, really high. And when you did the analysis and extrapolated to 4.5 million boosters in Israel, that's 13,000 hospitalizations. Or in the U.S., with our population and whatever it was, 90,000 or so boosters, we're at 270,000 hospitalizations.
Yes.
just from a booster.
Right. No, it's crazy.
We need to halt the madness, and then we can do a deeper analysis. You can look at background rates for things like deaths and hospitalization, all-cause mortality. And we're finding without a doubt that that is going up. It's just going up and up and up the more we vaccinate.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I'm working on the hardest right now is I'm working with a German guy and analyzing mortality data from Germany and correlating with vaccination. And there's like this huge increase, like a week or two after vaccine doses or, you know, if vaccine dose goes up a week or two later, mortality goes up, right? It's very strongly correlated. So we're going to try to write a paper on that.
Yeah. And of course, you're aware, at least the data in the US and the way the CDC set it up, anything that happens in the first 2 weeks after the vaccine is not counted as a vaccine injury.
Right.
They only start tracking it after 14 days. Well, I think it's like 80 some percent of injuries and deaths and hospitalizations are in the first 2 weeks after the vaccine.
Yep.
So that gets shifted over as if those were unvaxxed people. Exactly. It just totally distorts the data.
Okay. Another thing about this study, they found that for many people, they had pre-existing conditions, and then the vaccine made it worse, right? Especially for people with anxiety, depression, autoimmune disease, or it made it worse. Let's say, I don't know, it made it worse. It got worse after the booster. I mean, you know, I guess it could be a coincidence, but it's unlikely that, you know, 25% of people would suddenly, you know, see a worsening of their autoimmune condition.
Right? Yeah. I think there's our public health agencies are too quick to say, you know, coincidence, association does not mean causation. You know, we like to throw that little phrase around, but folks, association might mean causation. All you need to have is enough data, other studies, and a plausible scientific reason, which we have. So,
the whole attitude is so cavalier, right? And so uncautious. Yeah. And you would think that, you know, they do everything they can to try to reject the hypothesis that the vaccines are causing because they're worried about false positives. Well, what about false negatives, right? I mean, what about saying it doesn't cause when it actually does? That's what we should really be concerned about.
Absolutely. The precautionary principle, unless we're absolutely sure, we should not be doing this.
One of the other things I wanted to talk about was this, was how quickly these events occurred after the booster dose, right? How soon after the booster dose, and then how long they lasted for. So with the neurological events, we saw some of those were pretty serious. You're losing your memory, you're having vision problems, acute hearing problems. I met somebody who said like 2 days after the booster the day after she got this was the first dose or second dose, said, I have double vision. I can't see. And I don't know how that was a couple of days after she got the vaccination. I don't know how long it lasted. Right. So you're seeing that a lot of these events, the neurological events, seizures, we don't know which ones were which, right? Are happening immediately to within an hour to 20, you know, in the first day, in the first week. And many of them, even though they constantly tell us that these things are short-lived, they pass quickly, 47% of the people who had these neurological complications said that they were still ongoing 3 to 4 weeks after they got the booster dose when the survey happened, right? And you have all these other ones the allergic ones, 33%. That's probably people with rashes, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, these aren't short-lived. And the fact that so many of them occurred so shortly after the booster is a strong suggestion of causality.
Right. Absolutely. And these are not minor reactions and they're lasting. We are really harming people.
What do I see for the future? So a law was passed recently, but basically it was a law that was extended the the state of emergency kind of until the end of 2022. And it increased the powers of the Ministry of Health to make unilateral decisions about, for example, if they felt there was a business that was being a harm to public health, they could just choose to shut it down.
That law passed?
Yeah, it passed.
It's been enacted?
It's been enacted, yeah. And there's all kinds of other problems with it. And it allows, so if there's another emergency, essentially the parliamentary process can be completely bypassed by a decision-making body that's extra parliamentary, that would be given these special powers without any need for any kind of confirmation from the parliament, from the Knesset.
This is clearly, sorry to interrupt you. This is clearly a tactic that they're using, because here in Oregon, there's a law we're going to be voting on that's just like that. The public health can declare emergencies on any basis they want and have complete power to institute whatever measures necessary. This has been informative and also slightly disturbing as we sort of were conversing about the state of the world. Do you have a positive note you could leave our viewers with on anything, what we can do as individuals, what you can do for yourself, any insight or thoughts?
I heard something really nice that kind of encapsulated my experience, which is that the stars shine brightest in the darkest night, mm-hmm. right? So that there is an opportunity here. Things are really, feeling pretty dark right now. But it's an opportunity to look around and find like-minded people, people with the same spirit and the same priorities, and connect with them, right? And to maintain those connections. But things, I do ultimately believe things are going to turn around. I mean, it looks bad, but you see that things are starting to shift, right, at the same time. So I am hopeful, and so it gives us an opportunity to make those kinds of connections with good people.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That is a super important concept. The oppressor is never going to freely give you your freedom. We have to unite, and it's those of us who see it clearly, we can start joining forces, like you said, finding like-minded people, and it crosses all political landscapes, whether the various factions that have been put at war with each other. We're all waking up to the fact we have one common oppressor that's trying to sort of control the world, and we're all going to lose if we don't unite for and stand for what we know to be true. So that's a very good point. And folks, if you're out there feeling alone, but starting to wake up to what's actually going on, stay plugged in, find your like-minded people, and things are shifting. There's a huge shift. And that's why I think it feels so darkest, right? Just because you're trying to control
things. Always darkest before the dawn.
Yep. Darkest before the dawn. Those who are trying to control the oppressors, they're starting to get nervous that they're losing the narrative. And so, brave scientists, and you're a sociologist, criminologist, professor, PhD, you know what you're talking about, and it's not in your career's best interest to be talking about these things. It is highly risky, but we have to. And so thank you for your bravery and your willingness to share the story that's going on there in Israel.
Thank you, Paul.
Welcome, Chris Strader, to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. You are under a fire of your own sort, right, that you're going to share with us. And I really want to thank you for joining us and being able to share your story. I think what you are going through is not unique. You're not alone. You're a divorced parent, and you are trying to co-parent a child in a situation where, decision-making is tricky, to say the least, right? Share with me a little background about yourself and what's going on.
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me, Dr. Paul. It's an honor and privilege to speak with you. And I thank you for the fight that you're taking on your shoulders to help, educate our population about what we're going through in today's society with this horrible, horrible thing that we're putting into our arms. Just to give you a brief background, I am a recovered alcoholic of over 6 years.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And during my journey of some troubled times that I went through during my alcoholism, through my divorce of the mother of my daughter, I signed over my rights to my daughter out of my love and care for her, because I was not able to be there as a parent during the times that I was going through when I was struggling. And so my daughter's mother, she does have full medical decision making for my daughter currently. And I'm actively fighting to get that back through legal processes and things of that nature. But that brings me to the situation of her, my daughter's health. She is going to be 13 next month. And unfortunately, my daughter, the mother of my daughter has allowed my daughter to be injected. And I'm very upset. I'm very scared. I'm very sad. And
when you say injected, are you talking about the COVID-19 shot?
Yes, I wasn't sure whether we could say that or not.
Sure.
Okay, so we're free to say anything we need to?
Okay. Absolutely.
So yes, my daughter has been vaccinated with the COVID shot. And despite all of the education materials that I've sent her mother, pleaded, begged, asked her to seek other opinions from her pediatrician, nothing has sunk in, and she went ahead and did it.
Yeah. So that scenario that you're describing is one that I face in my office with my pediatric practice all the time.
Sure.
In fact, more often than not, it's the moms who are pleading with me. They're divorced. They actually may have custody, but they don't want to follow the full CDC schedule, or they don't want to give the COVID vaccine. And in their instance, the parent, who might be a dad who's not as involved, is insisting, I'm going to take custody if you don't follow the CDC schedule, right?
Right.
And you see that pressure. And so it's sort of a little interesting to have a dad now on the other side who's going, I would like to do things differently for my daughter, but I have no ability to do that.
Right.
And so, it's a very, how can I say it? It's a hard position to be in because you just have no power, right?
That's the truth. And the only power I have is the education that I'm trying to give her mother, prayer, of course, and just, trying to never give up in the fight for trying to bring the light to her mother about what the reality is of what we're going through with this awful situation.
Yeah. Chris, you brought up something really powerful and wonderful when you said the only thing I can do is education. And you're actually right. I try to counsel parents who are in your position not to go overboard on the legal side, battle for custody, sure, all that stuff. Because honestly, all that does, when you're in battle for custody, for example, it's just creating more division. And the child gets stuck in the middle, right? It's just so complicated. So when you can come from a place of love and prayer and trying to educate, I commend you for that. That is absolutely a very sound and wise approach.
Absolutely. And I think you said it very well in that the children are not responsible for, the parents' issues. And we have to keep that separate from the children. And we have to remind ourselves that nothing else matters outside of the well-being of our child and the love for our child. And I've tried to, from my perspective, remind her mother that although it is a scary time and the media has done a great job of inducing fear into our population about this.
Yeah.
And I have to consider myself as being on the other side. And if I didn't have the knowledge that I have now regarding this virus, how would I react? And so I need to try to take that in perspective of if I was going to be receiving information as a parent, and I'm dead set on getting my child vaccinated, you know, how would I be best willing to receive that information? And so I'm trying to do that for her mother and not be overbearing and say, you know, something to the effect of, hey, you must watch this or you must look at this from a perspective of love for our child and say, in our daughter's well-being, would you please consider reading this material?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's a sound approach. And thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure there are other parents who are watching who are in a similar position.
Sure.
Feeling frustrated and unable to get their message across to their partner, or I mean, you can even be married and be disagreeing on this
right.
topic. This topic is dividing families across the nation.
Absolutely.
I think out of curiosity, what resources have you shared with your daughter's mother?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's vitally important for every human being, whether it's a child or an adult, is to do the holistic approach, you know, to take care of our health and immune system, first of all, you know, through supplementation of vitamin D, zinc, quercetin. And I know you being a pediatrician, you have some different input on, you know, how to treat that with a child. But, you know, I think, you know, for myself, you know, I think the making sure our bodies are equipped to handle, you know, any infection in our immune system is boosted to the point of, well, I guess boosted may be an improper term, but powerful as we're God given with our immunity to fight any kind of infection, including the COVID vaccine. So I think supplementation with different things is important, but also I think also, you know, education from Dr. Tenpenny as an example, Dr. Zelenko has great information. Dr. Simone Gold with America's Frontline Doctors has been wonderful in the fight for, you know, the information that we need. So things like that, a lot of online materials, you know, just in simple format that can be easy to read and easy to understand and easy to comprehend. Also want to mention the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance has great information as well on different protocols that you can have and research for yourself. And I think it's important for people to understand that when you present somebody materials, it's important to have them research these things for themselves. You know,
yes.
give them the starting point of where to go,
yeah.
but also to try to encourage them to don't believe what I'm saying. Research for yourself of what the reality of this stuff is.
Touched on my key supplements. I mean, vitamin D, folks, if you are not on adequate doses of vitamin D, you're really leaving your immune system under supported, right?
So
if you support your natural immune system, this is what we found. We've learned from the COVID epidemic, pandemic, whatever you want to call it, that the natural immune system is so powerful and so effective. But if you are very low in vitamin D, which most Americans are, if you're not supplementing, you are almost guaranteed you're deficient. Then, and you're certainly not optimal, then your natural immune system is compromised. And you mentioned also the zinc and the quercetin specifically, they're helpful for COVID because of reducing how it binds to those ACE receptors. So you can reduce the severity of the illness should you have COVID by being supported with those supplements in particular. So there's several others, vitamin C, N-acetylcysteine, other things you can do. And then if you actually get COVID and you get really sick, which folks, this can happen whether you're vaccinated or not, right? So we now know that the vaccine is not doing a good job at protecting against Delta or Omicron. So Delta swept through the country. Now Omicron's done the same thing. By now, most people have either had the COVID-19 or are immune to it, either naturally or from vaccine immunity, although the vaccine immunity does not appear to be lasting. So you may end up finding yourself still vulnerable down the road. That all that said, the key thing is still just what you were mentioning, Chris. Take the appropriate supplements. And if you get sick, jump right away on early treatment. And you mentioned some of my favorites, the COVID-19criticalcare.com. That's the website for that critical care organization. There's C19ivermectin.com if you want to learn more about that. The AAPSonline.org, yep. You know, they have that home-based COVID treatment guide that's been out for over a year. It's very well done. Peter McCullough has been involved with that. And there are a ton of resources, as you mentioned. So I think that's the most important message for parents who feel like they don't have any say in what's going on for their child, is stay loving, stay connected, and educate, like you said.
That's right. You know, there's a lot of, you know, wonderful Americans out there that were fighting for the health and well-being of our population. And you touched on, you know, if you do get sick, and I've had COVID, and, you know, been through it and was able to get some ivermectin and started feeling better, that, you know, as soon as I took it. And, but there's plenty of options: budesonide, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, fluvoxamine, when you're methylprednisolone, you know, when you get all this stuff. I mean, if you get infected, there's so many therapeutic options out there that will cure you, you know, and so don't make a permanent decision when you have so many options for a disease that is so survivable, and don't take fear out of it.
You make a great point. So I'm a pediatrician. Kids do not get serious COVID disease.
That's right.
I mean, there'll be case reports. They're kind of one in a million, one in 100,000, that sort of thing. But healthy kids do just fine. It's a common cold, especially these latest variants. There needs to be zero fear if you are a child or even a young adult or even an older adult if you're healthy. And what you mentioned, Chris, is so spot on. Thank you. Reminding people that there's so much you can do. First, to regulate, support your immune system, but secondly, to treat if you get sick, because we're all going to get it if we haven't had it already. You don't need to be afraid of it. So that is a very powerful message. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Yeah. No, you bring up a good point. Everybody's claiming they've got the science. And the problem is, science is so easily manipulated by people who have money, people who have financial gains by pushing out science. I mean, just the science that was done by Pfizer, for example, to get their emergency use authorization on that jab. I mean, it's such shoddy science. I mean, they have less than 200 people who get a COVID symptom and they close the data. Yeah. And then they do a relative risk analysis to say, hey, look, the vaccinated people did better. But the absolute risk reduction was less than 1%.
No, it's,
I mean, how would you like to take a jab that could kill you, that could destroy your immune system and do all these other unknown things, because we have no long-term safety data, for a 99% chance that it will fail?
It's amazing.
That's failed just to prevent symptoms. They didn't even look at whether it did anything for hospitalizations or preventing deaths. And then the news just runs with that and their fear agenda. You're absolutely right. I love what you said, faith over fear, but just have faith in your own intuition and your own immune system.
Exactly.
You're not a God-fearing person. It's okay. Have faith in the hard, good science, not the junk science that's being promoted by people who have financial interests. Parents, especially parents, you know, if an adult wants to make a reckless decision and ride a motorcycle without a helmet, sure, you can survive that. If you want to take this COVID shot and think that it's the right thing for you, go for it. You're an adult. You can make your own decisions. But parents, you are charged with protecting your children from predators who are going to make money off of your kid or do something that could harm them for their own interests. That's basically what's going on. I know that sounds harsh, but the reality is kids don't need this shot. This shot can only harm. It's not going to help.
Right.
So parents, you have to stand in that gap and you have to say no. And you have to realize, unfortunately, I am a doctor. I'm an MD. I'm still licensed, though Oregon's giving me a run for my money. you know, but not all doctors feel the same way. You know, we have a great divide within families, but we also have a great divide within doctors, not just in this country. Different countries are doing things differently and seeing the data differently because of they're actually looking at all the data.
Right.
So unfortunately, we have a CDC, we have a public health system, we have government officials who are compromised. It's clear they must have conflicts of interest. Who knows what exactly those are, but it's usually somehow financial or power. You know, power and money corrupts. So go to somebody who's got no conflicts of interest and go to the data, as you said, Chris.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. So I just think it's important. Education is key to everything with COVID and with your health in general. And, you know, I think you mentioned a lot of great points and, you know, I have to tend to believe that most people err on the side of good and they want to do good and they want to help people. But at the same time, if somebody is basing their decisions off of inaccurate data or manipulated data or placed data to them, and they're making decisions based upon that, they may feel like they're making the right decision, but in reality, they're making decisions based upon faulty data to induce them to make those decisions. And yeah. So that's why I think you need to take a holistic approach to everything and really, again, just trust but verify everything that you're told. And don't be scared to get a second opinion from what a medical provider is telling you. That it is your life, your body, and more importantly, as you said, it's your child's life and your child's body. So if you have to get four opinions, five opinions, do it. Again, I want to thank you for the honor and privilege of speaking with you and hope that my situation has helped other people. That's the only thing that matters to me is that hopefully my story can help others in their journey.
That's well put, Chris. And I'm going to put one exclamation point on this. If you are struggling as a co-parent or in a situation where you feel like you have no power, I was given this advice by a counselor in my first divorce, and that was power shifts. If you stay loving, if you stay child focused on every single decision, what is best for your child, right, power will shift. You just keep doing the right thing and rewards will come. Be patient.
I always say if you keep doing the right thing will happen.
And absolutely.
I believe that.
Well, God bless, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Paul. It's been an honor and privilege, and thank you for what you do.
And my privilege also. Welcome, Bernadette, back to Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire. You are the host of an Informed Life Radio and so much more, Public Policy Director of Informed Choice Washington. I know you do a lot with that organization. We're going to talk today about treatment protocols for those of you who may have suffered a vaccine effect or a vaccine injury, or perhaps you even have ongoing symptoms after having had a COVID illness.
Everywhere we go, you run into somebody who says they're not doing well, right, post-vaccination. And so I have put on the website, informchoicewa.org. If you look up at the tab, there's a recovery tab. And I'm going to try to keep this populated with the best of the best links to some recovery protocols that are coming from organizations and doctors that you and I know and trust, Dr. Paul. And I should probably have one up here from you. So you need to get me a link if you've got one yourself that you would like shared. So if you just go there, you'll be able to find these links. I'll start first with the FLCCC, those great COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance doctors who were on the leading edge of COVID-19 protocols. Early treatment, late treatment, just doing fabulous work, bringing and updating their protocols. What they have found is the protocol they were developing for long haul was also helping those who were having vaccine adverse reactions, injuries, side effects, whatever you want to call them. People are getting them to various degrees. And I know we all know somebody who still has issues. So this is a great place to start. You will likely, with this one, need to find a doctor to work with, a functional medicine doctor, an MD, ND, because some of these are prescription, but there's also some nutrition there. So Dr. Paul, do you want to look at this and talk a little bit about your thoughts on some of the components?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the process that is causing you symptoms is your body's, basically, it's your body's attempt to get rid of this assault, right, on your immune system. The spike protein, the inflammatory response is such a huge thing. So that first line therapies, this has been found to be helpful. Actually, I've used ivermectin personally, it really was helpful. I have just countless firsthand reports of people I know who got very sick, either with COVID or a few who've actually had vaccine adverse events, start to improve almost immediately on ivermectin. So there's just a host of literature supporting its use, even though the mainstream media would have you think otherwise. The inflammatory response, go a little while into your process, and you have an inability of the body to turn off the inflammatory response. And that's what's causing so many of the symptoms. So many of you have heard of budesonide. If your inflammatory response is in the lungs, then inhaled budesonide, whether it's an inhaler or a nebulizer, can take that inflammatory steroid right to the lung where the effects are. But prednisone is one of the most potent anti-inflammatory drugs you take orally. And if you need it, it's amazing what it does. Even back 40 years ago when I was in medical school and we're doing rotations in the hospital, there was a saying, you don't let anybody die without trying prednisone. I mean, that's 40 years ago. We've had this medication and this tool in our tool chest for a very long time. Naltrexone low dose, I've used it, not in this instant, but I've used it in many other conditions where we have chronic inflammation, especially in the brain, kids with developmental issues. Sometimes it's amazingly effective and it's very safe at these low doses. Omega-3 fatty acids help shutting down the inflammatory response when it's gone on too long. That's the natural body's way of doing that. And vitamin D, folks, it is number one. You absolutely need to have optimal levels of vitamin D. These second-line therapies, third-line therapies, these are things you're going to need a doctor's prescription and doctor's oversight, because they can have side effects, but they can also be very helpful. I love the number four optional adjunctive therapies. These are things you can get at your local health food store for the most part. Not all of them down at the bottom. There's a couple things, but these are all useful tools. So thank you for pointing this out.
You're welcome. And I just also want to point out, and this is something I want to talk to the COVID-19 doctors about, with vitamin D, we do want to be careful from what I've learned. You want to also supplement your vitamin K, because if you're taking a lot of vitamin D for a long time, you're going to get deficient K and begin having other health issues. And you also really need the vitamin A. So if you could talk a little bit about the importance of A with D.
Yeah. Well, let me first talk about K, because most mainstream docs aren't even aware or using the combination of D3 plus K2. And it's the only thing I recommend to my patients. When you take a lot of vitamin D, one of the things that helps you do is absorb calcium. And that's a good thing, especially for kids, for example, growing bones, those sorts of things. Too much calcium, however, could cause some problems. Think about atherosclerosis, you know, plaques. And that's why vitamin D studies are mixed. Vitamin K, one of its roles is to store calcium in the bone where it belongs. So that way you can take high dose vitamin D without the negative downside of possibly too much calcium in your circulation. So that's huge.
And I remember once a lecture by the immunologist, Tatiana Obukanich, and she was talking about measles. And if you're low in D or you're low in A, either one can make you have a bad experience with measles. And as we know, the World Health Organization with measles, you know, two bolus doses at the first sign of measles can prevent severe disease and save lives, like in third world countries and this country. Our country, Dr. Paul, because we eat so poorly and we do so much that depletes us, we're probably health-wise, you know, on par with what would be considered a third world or a poor nation, because we're just not getting the nutrients that we need. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And that's my experience with vitamin A. It had to do with the measles. Vitamin A is the only vitamin, really. I mean, if I want to just make a big generalization, it's the only nutrient you can actually become toxic on. So I have actually seen a child who couldn't walk because they were getting so much vitamin A. As soon as that was stopped, they regained their walking ability and they were fine. That's one in an entire career. We are mostly running around so deficient because we're fearful of that nutrient, and we need it. It's vital for our immune system function. and right. Our ability to fight viruses. And measles is the perfect example.
Yeah, exactly. And our diets are so depleted. Traditional diets used to be full of organ meats and cod liver oil and that sort of thing. And we just don't tend to do that. So we're not getting it from our food supply. And beta carotene is just not the same thing. So yeah, that might be another topic for a show to give some really good information. So let's go ahead and then look at another. This is like one of my very favorite places to look about what they're calling spike protein detox guide. I actually was speaking just yesterday with Dr. Ryan Cole, and the studies are really interesting for wild COVID itself, which is, you know, comes from a lab, you know, that spike protein sticks around way longer than proteins generally do. They're finding months and months later, if you had COVID, you're still, that spike protein is still, they're finding it in places. And so that could be responsible for long haul. So you still need to be addressing spike protein or spike protein fragments. And of course, with the vaccine products that make your body make that spike protein, that is not shutting off for everybody within a time. It was supposed to last a very short amount of time. They're finding that no, it for some people, it's not shutting off and they're still pumping out spike protein. So this spike protein detox guide by the World Council for Health. And these are individuals, you and I, some of them, you know, that we've talked about before, excellent guidance from global practitioners. What I really love about this website, it's going to take people a long time to go through because it educates you. And it tells you about things that you can do that helps with that spike protein, but then it explains why. And there's plenty of places to click on and go. And I feel so empowered if I understand why I'm taking this and why I'm grabbing that. It helps me be more compliant, as it were, that I will do it daily if I understand why I'm taking it. So I love the way it educates you. So there's proactive supportive measures that they talk about. With diet, anti-inflammatory diet. Here they do mention vitamin A, E, iodine, selenium, trace elements, and more. It educates you on the spike protein and what it does, where it's coming from the vaccine, and how it's interacting with the body, how to reduce your load. And then it beginning into some spike protein inhibitors, starting with these natural you know, pine needles, neem, dandelion leaf, ivermectin, which is semi-natural because it's fermented bacteria from soil. Spike protein neutralizers, the good old N-acetylcysteine, glutathione, fennel tea. You'll see there's just so many things. Nature is a cornucopia. Nature provides. You don't have to say, oh, I can't get that. Well, you can get this. You can't get that. You can get this. Nature, you know, is just brilliant in what it supplies us with. And this website does such a great job of providing many things that you can choose. It talks about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, quercetin. Oh, you know, always you want your hydroxy and your quercetin with zinc. I've never heard of fisetin. Have you heard of that one?
That's a new one for me.
We'll have to look that up and report. you know, then it starts really getting down into cytokines and some of the science. So some science nerds have a good time reading that. I used to spend a lot more time going down those rabbit holes, and I hate that right now I don't have time. I love exploring all of that. But it's there when I'm ready, when I have some time to squirrel away. And then when you get to the very bottom of this, you see it goes on and on. It's just fantastic. And then the big question, where to take, how much to take, where does it come from, and where to get it? I mean, bravo to World Council for Health. And it goes down the list and lets you know if it's a natural source or where to get it. Ivermectin is a natural source, but it's by prescription. Hydroxychloroquine, vitamin C, and it goes down all of them. It's beautiful, beautiful guidance. And always we do recommend that you find a trusted healthcare practitioner of some sort when you're self-medicating, especially if you're, you know, going to be getting into doing a lot of stuff, because even natural supplements, Dr. Paul, as you well know, like your vitamin A story of the child, anything taken in a high dose or for very long amount of time can act like a drug and can have adverse outcomes. So, you know, if you've got that trusted healthcare practitioner, which we've been begging you to find to guide you on this journey of health and wellness, check with them to see what they're recommending. Tell them what you are thinking of taking and refer with them. So again, you can go to informchoicewell.org and look at the recovery tab on that website to find links to those and begin exploring and share. So this episode is Be the News. You're not turning on the radio, and well, some radio shows, Bernadette's in particular, but mainstream radio, TV, what have you, your Department of Health, the CDC, they're not telling you this. Right. So yeah. Please be the news. Share everywhere, because everywhere you go, you're going to meet somebody who's not doing well. And you can offer them hope that there are protocols and brilliant doctors who continue to study ways to heal.
Absolutely. Folks, we're waking up to the fact that we cannot trust the news that we're getting out of mainstream, out of our public health, out of the CDC, the NIH, especially when it comes around this whole issue of vaccines and COVID and bioweapons and all of that. It's just too conflicted. Powerful interests are controlling the narrative. However, there are so many great resources, such as this show, such as Bernadette, Your Informed Life Radio, Your Informed Choice Washington organization, the links you've provided, FLCCC. We've got, you know, a host of great resources, Children's Health Defense, Del Bigtree's Highwire, and so many more. Plug in to sources that you know are doing the work for you at really, in many cases, great cost to their careers. If you're talking about MDs who are putting their careers on the line, because it's just become that important. This is the issue of our time, health freedom, medical freedom. And the good news is COVID-19 is basically done, folks. You can even hear that happening on mainstream media. People are now going to have to back away from their narratives as the truth starts coming out about what really was going on and the information the CDC had all along while they were sharing a false narrative of you need this vaccine to get through this. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And take this time, this breath, this pause while you're not under intense pressure to learn, to be braced, to be ready, to have the medicines on hand, to have that trusted practitioner on hand, because they're, I don't believe the powers that be are done making us live in fear. And we have to create in this pause a whole new system of sharing good information and helping each other to stay healthy and to recover when we come down with something. So enjoy the freedom, that little bit of freedom that is there, and then secure it. And I will encourage everybody, wherever you are, look to see what good legislation is out there. Support good legislation that is working toward protecting your medical freedom rights so they can never do this to us again.
Absolutely. Let's close on that note. It's a note of hope. Oregon gets to throw away their masks tomorrow. So this is the last day of the virus being a problem in Oregon. Tomorrow it's gone. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Oregon is so far behind so many states who've, you know, come to realize that there's nothing to fear out there right now. And anyway, thank you, Bernadette.
You're
folks,
welcome.
You now have a resource to help your loved ones who might still be suffering either from some long-haul COVID symptoms or vaccine injury or effects. Dr. Paul here. DoctorsandScience.com is where you go to get access to my exclusive members-only section. This is how you, the viewers, support our work. We have no sponsors. We are fully supported by you, our viewers. What do you get in the members section? It's quite a list. You get access to a couple of my ebooks. The first one is the authoritative reference list for my Vaccine Friendly Plan book. I also have written a book, very extensive, called Everyday Health, that covers pretty much what I think you should be doing if you want to live a healthy life in this world today. But there is so much more. Join me monthly for a live Q&A. Submit your questions online. Make sure you get them answered. That is my intention for you. It's a time for us to interact. In addition to this, You get transcripts of every show. We have other bonus content. And I think one of the huge bonus content pieces is the PowerPoints of the talks I'm giving as I travel around the country. People are always asking me, how can we get those PowerPoints? This is how you do it. Head on over to doctorsinscience.com and become a member and join the team of Against the Wind. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsinscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsinscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.